I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
All right, McFarland, McFarland Energy, thank you so, so much for sponsoring the Bradfoe Show. And this is a very special Bradfoe Show because we were able to track down a player and a person that, to be perfectly honest with you, we've been trying to get for a while. So Rick Porcello is the guy that we were trying to track down. And Rick Porcello is the guy who is on the podcast today, making news, catching up, reminding us why Rick Porcello is always a good time on the podcast. Veteran of the Bradfoe Show from such educational films as podcasts with two different podcasts at Twin Peaks down at Fort Myers with Joe Kelly. Who could forget those? A staple in the podcast world. And obviously some great memories with the Red Sox. A lot of good interviews, a lot of good times, a lot of good memories. Then he went to the Mets. That's the last time that anyone saw Rick Porcello playing in 2020. Since then, we have not seen Rick Porcello. We've heard a little bit from Rick Porcello. I know that I had talked to him briefly, nothing about why he's not playing or why he didn't play. I know Chad Jennings of The Athletic caught up with him about Garrett Whitlock's number, which we talked about on this podcast. But really nothing about how or why he chose to do what he has been doing for the last couple of years. This guy is a young guy. I mean, he is a young guy. He is only, as we sit here right now, he is only 33 years old. 33 years old. And yeah, he had some down years, 2019 and 2020, that sort of weird 2020 year with the Mets. But still, you would think that a guy who was in his early 30s would get another chance and certainly not veer off where he did. And where he veered off, as he explains, was going up to Vermont and building a house with his brother. Now, when we say building a house, I'm not talking about hiring someone to build a house. He built the house. He built the house with his hands. So this is what he was doing. He spent the entirety of 2021, that first full year out of Major League Baseball, building a house with his brother. Then obviously was around this past year. And then, you know, so the question remains, what happened? Where did Rick Porcello go? And the other question is, what is Rick Porcello's plans? Well, both are newsworthy, but you're going to have to listen to the podcast to find out. This was all, by the way, thanks to the great people at the David Ortiz Celebrity Golf Tournament down at Marco Island. Raised over $1.5 million for kids who need, little kids who need heart surgeries. Every $5,000 paid for a heart surgery. Great cause. We talked about it a lot in the past. Got a chance to catch up with a lot of people that we haven't seen in a long time. And we'll talk about that going forward on future podcasts. But this is the Rick Porcello. Rick Porcello deserves his moment in the sun, both figuratively and literally. And that's exactly what we're going to give him. All right, here you go. Rick Porcello makes his return to the Bradfoe Show. We found him. We found him, Rick Porcello. Tell me, Rick, where you've been.
Well, I just said that, but you weren't taping, so now I'm not going to repeat everything.
You've been in Washington, you've been in South Carolina, you've been in Florida, you've been in Vermont. I get the part. We get the part about the house. I'm going to edit that together. You built the house, but you've been all over. So, but it is good to see you here. We're here at the David Ortiz Celebrity Golf Tournament, which you've never been to, but I have numerous times. But honestly, I was super happy when I saw you in the list. It was a 50% chance. I thought you weren't coming, but you watched. I mean, let's be honest. I haven't seen, no one's seen you. Where are you? No one.
By design.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it by design? So all sincerity, you've been up in Vermont a lot, but you had been up in Vermont. You had roots up there even when you were playing, right?
Yeah, my parents had a property up there since 1988, so I've grown up, you know, going up there and spending my summers and falls, and we do all of our family holidays up there, so it's been enjoyable to spend more time there and, you know, actually starting to learn a little bit more about, I guess, lack thereof of resources for a lot of the young ball players up there. So starting to try and get involved with some of the Little League organizations and try and figure out if we can bridge the gap for some of these kids that don't have, the indoor facilities or the fields or the direction and training or anything like that, you know, some other kids have in other states. So it's been fun learning that, and I'm really looking forward to trying to help those kids out.
So now you've officially now become part of the Baseball Isn't Boring crew, which, by the way, did you know that I wrote a book with Joe Kelly?
No, I did know, but I did not read it.
Well, it's not out yet, so it's...
Okay.
All right. Well,
send me a copy.
I will. I'll sign. Send you
baseball. Put it on my mantle.
Pretend to read it. Oh, it's great. But anyway, it's great that you're doing. You have always. I just gave this example, and I mean it. Like, you were one of my favorites to cover, and I used many, many examples, including all the podcasts we did in spring training with the aforementioned Joe Kelly, which you're always welcome back if you want to come back down to Fort Myers.
I appreciate that. And all these nice things you're saying, but I don't have a lot of pocket cash on me right now, so
I'll
go to the ATM.
This is
I'll get you later.
There's a lot of free stuff flying around here right now. But it's, one example I gave was, like, we auctioned off instruction for a young, I think he was 12 years old. He took him out to the bullpen and taught him. It'll be 20 minutes. You were out there for an hour. But the reason I bring that up is because you could tell, like, I give this example of how, like, major leaguers love that. Like, you were playing for the Red Sox. You were in the grind of the season. But it felt like, okay, this was your path. Am I wrong? It felt like this was, man, you really loved doing that.
No, I did. I had a lot of fun that day and look forward to doing it more. I think when you look at young kids that are, you know, aspiring ball players, we've all been in that position at one point in our lives. And those are times that I look back on fondly. To be able to take a kid out to the bullpen and teach him is hopefully something that I'll never forget. I know whenever I went to a big league game and, you know, my parents would take us there for batting practice. If I got a baseball thrown to me during batting practice, instantly that guy was my favorite player and I'd follow
him. Dude, we just talked about this. So we just had Brett Phillips on the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast. And he said, you know how I can tell you how you can grow the game by 50% is having everybody sign an autograph or just wave, because that impacts that person so much. So that's what you're talking about.
Absolutely. And to be honest with you, I wish I had done it more while I was playing. You get caught up in the grind and what you need to do to help the ball club win, and you kind of get in your own world a little bit, and sometimes you don't appreciate the impact that has, but that's what the game is all about. I mean, it's about the fans and the kids and making memories for them. Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Sid, when you were playing, I want an MLB trade rumors link. Oh, sorry, man, I just spit on you. Are you retired?
Yeah, I'm pretty much done. I haven't signed the papers yet because I'm, you know, my agent's pretty much done with me now that I'm not playing anymore. So maybe if he, I'll pick up the phone, give him a call, and sign the retirement papers. But I'm done.
Okay, so you can say it's just as good as papers. You can say, this is Rick Porcello, and I want to tell all the listeners that I'm retired.
Yep. Well, you just did it for me. But this is Rick Porcello. I want to tell all the listeners I'm retired, and thank you for the great memories. And just thanks for everything.
I tell you what, we were talking with Barry Larkin, name drop, about the Hall of Fame, and you know, your name will come up. And you know, I'm always wary of voting for guys because I like them. You would test that. I would actually want to vote for you. And you had a good run. You won a Cy Young, which, holy mackerel, you won a Cy Young. Like, again, congratulations on winning the Cy Young. And this is another thing. You came down here to the David Ortiz Celebrity Golf Tournament to basically for me to praise you. You know why? Because I'm trying to get you out of Vermont a little bit more.
To be honest with you, the only reason why I came is because I saw you were going to be here. That and obviously the kids. The children's hospital. But I got to stop you because there's absolutely no chance that I should ever be in a Hall of Fame conversation. I'm honored for you to say that, but you know, I almost feel a little uncomfortable being here with some of these great players and Hall of Famers like Barry Larkin, because I'm very fortunate. I was blessed during my career, and to me, the greatest accomplishment that I had personally and our team was winning the World Series in 2018. The Cy Young was incredible, and I was honored to receive that award, but I never would have been able to do that without the teammates that I had and the support system that they provided and standing behind me every day and, you know, chesting up ground balls and catcher Sandy Leon and Christian Vasquez and all those guys. I mean, those guys were just as much a part of that award as I was. So I look at the World Series as something that, you know, that to me was the crowning achievement of my career, and I'll never forget.
I didn't say I was going to vote for you for the Hall of Fame. I say I was thinking about it. How presumptuous of you.
I don't even know how I'd get in that conversation. That's why I'm trying to.
Well, you're going to be on the ballot. So
again,
you,
I have no pocket cash on me. That's fair. Totals, you know, rising rapidly.
In the past, when we did the podcast in the past, how he would pay me by leaving the tip at Twin Peaks at Fort Myers.
Well, part of the reason why I went is because you said that the burgers and the wings were on you. So.
Well, they were. I was, but you were very generous with leaving the tip. You didn't have to do that. Joe certainly didn't.
That's why he makes great content for a book.
That's chapter six. take me back to... I have to ask because I haven't seen you. And we talked briefly, and when I asked you about it, you said, well, come up to Vermont, buy me a beer, and I'll tell you. And I tried, and you claimed there was no cell reception or something. I don't know.
No, that's because that damn house took a hell of a lot longer than we thought it was going to take, so it's still working on
it. No, that's fair. That's fair. So talk to me about, like, what, you know, the when you came to grips or what happened when it came to... of making that transition, like you said, I'm not going to say like leaving baseball because you're not leaving baseball, making that transition from major leaguer of chasing major league teams, of chasing that job to doing what you're doing now.
Yeah, there's a lot of personal stuff in there that I probably not want to get into, but I think the bottom line was I was very fortunate to have the years that I had in the big leagues. I think COVID lent some perspective on my life, and I wanted to be with my family, and I wanted to you know, get back into that type of a lifestyle and be around them, because every year that you're gone playing ball, you know, is another year where your parents are getting older, your brothers and all that stuff are getting older, and I don't know. You know, I think COVID probably impacted a lot of people like that, and I was no different.
Did teams reach out?
Yeah, there was some interest, but I had two horseshoe years back to back, so not that much interest.
I mean, listen, I can rattle off a lot of people who had worse years than you, who had a lot of interest, but it's, you know, I think that it's funny because not only does your name come up over the years about like being a good guy, being a good clubhouse guy, but also sort of the evolution of pitching. And we talked even when we were playing. I always enjoyed the conversations about the evolution of pitching, where you know, they're going away from the sinker balls. Now they're prioritizing high fastballs and everything else. And it seemed like there was, for you, like obviously you were bread and butter with the sinker, but you also were a student of pitching. Was pitching going like in a direction that was not fitting for you, or how did you view that?
You know, I think sometimes you look at the game, you look at what's being successful the last couple of years. Obviously, the high spin rate, four-seam fastball has been very successful, the sharp breaking balls. And the game goes through evolutions and cycles. I remember when I first got to the big leagues, the cutter was the big pitch. Nobody could hit a cutter. Mariano kind of, you know, everyone looked at that, and he dominated with one pitch, and everyone started throwing a little cut fastball, and then that got, the hitters caught up to that, and it's always changing, and I'm sure the sinker will come back around. It already kind of is. I think for some guys that have a really good one, they're back to being able to be effective, because now it's not a pitch that hitters are seeing as much. But, you know, I think I was maybe at times trying to chase what was being successful in the game and not sticking to what I was always successful with, and maybe got lost a little bit there in my last year in Boston, and was working on trying to get that back, you know, with the Mets, and then COVID hit, and some other things changed for me. But, you know, it's always a constant evolution, and hitters change their swings to start hitting certain pitches that pitchers are being successful with, and vice versa. So I don't necessarily think that it got away from what I could do successfully. I just didn't do what I did best well anymore.
Yeah, but just, and I'm sure you had voices too said, oh, you can't, even though you're a two senior guy, you can't do that because no one's doing that. That's not the way baseball's going. And I've seen that with other guys too. And this is the bigger conversation about baseball. And I remember, and maybe this isn't an apples to apples thing, but we had Joe Maddon on the podcast and he was talking about how he said, you know, like when a manager starts a game now, he has too many voices in his head. Can you relate to that a little bit?
I think that there's definitely more people that are contributing to strategy and that sort of thing. And ultimately, when you're the one on the field or if you're the one that's writing the lineup, I've never been a manager, so I can't speak for them, but you still are the person that's making those decisions, and I think it's still up to you to be able to decipher what is right and what is wrong for that particular situation. The new people that are in the game, whether it's analytics department, they're there to help, and they're there to lend advice and try and nudge you in the right direction based off of what they see. When I first got to the big leagues, everything was feel. You could see a guy with a 90-mile-an-hour fastball blowing hitters away, and you just see he's got a sneaky fastball. You didn't realize that he had an incredible spin rate, and there was that part of it involved. So, I'm definitely not going to take anything away from, the newer game. I think that it's
all good.
Better. I think that there's a balance, and when new things come into play, it becomes very popular, and then it starts to settle back into a balanced, centralized approach.
How about I talked to Brock, talked to Mitch Moreland about this year, about the valuing or devaluing of clubhouse guys, of the importance. And like undeniably, you were one of the leaders of that team, certainly a leader on the pitching staff. And now we see it where, and I do think this is cyclical. I do think it's coming back a little bit. There's an understanding, but there's definitely like, oh, to your point, oh, well, you know, he doesn't have that spin rate. He's a good guy, and he's important to the club, but he doesn't have the spin rate. I'm going to go with a guy with a 5 ERA who has a spin rate we're going to fix. You know, how important do you think is having sort of those clubhouse guys? Because obviously you guys, 2018, I think you said you never even have a team meeting, right? Something like that. I don't know. Maybe I forgot that, but it was a good chapter 7. But how important is that, and do you think that is something that has to be a little valued a little more?
I think it is very important because no matter how talented your team is on paper, or how many guys that have a good spin rate fastball, every team experiences ups and downs throughout the course of the season, and those types of leaders, the guys that know how to win ball games, that are going to go out there and hit a ground ball to second base to move a runner over, or a guy that can make a clutch pitch in a tough situation, or just somebody that's able to pick up somebody that's struggling in the clubhouse and go put your arm around them and talk to them. That's valuable. And I saw the value in that from a lot of the veteran guys when I was coming up in the big leagues. I tried to embody that a little bit when I became a veteran, and it's just I think it's something that's important. I think it's something that can really help teams win. If you start to get into that valley and kind of start to ascend back into the peak, you need those guys that are about winning ball games and not so much about the video and the analytics and their their pitching mechanics or their swing. You need some guys in there that are going to go grind it out.
You know, one of the guys, this in the current group, or the current group being last year, was Garrett Whitlock and following around Evaldi. Evaldi, like the last couple of years, Whitlock followed around Evaldi everywhere. And I thought it was cool, like that Whitlock identified you as another guy. I don't even, did you ever talk to him at all?
We texted back and forth. I haven't had the pleasure of meeting him in person yet. Been trying to stay away because this is his time to shine now. But just try to give him some encouraging words. This spring when I found out that he was a fan of mine. I'm not sure why, but
he liked to. He listened.
He's just kidding.
No. But he's
a hell of a pitcher.
The latest news. I know that all the drama last spring training, but the latest news. If you go to the Red Sox website now, number 22.
I know.
Has that been recent weeks that have cleared this? Or
Evaldi's been kind of my pipeline into it, and he said that Whitlock was nervous about asking her clubhouse guy about wearing 22. I'm a nobody. He needs to wear it and make his own. So I'm excited to see him out there in 22. It's a good number, and it treated me well in Boston.
So you gave, but I mean, this is a recent development. I mean, he's number 22 in the thing. Has this been cleared the last couple of weeks, or?
Oh, it was cleared in spring training.
Last year, but there was like a Derek Holland thing going on or something. I don't know what.
I don't know.
22. I don't know what was going on. There was a lot of chaos with number 22. But you gave the blessing, and he just deferentially said, "I'm going to keep number 72 for another year."
If it was my blessing to give, yes, I did give it. But,
that's you.
Ultimately, Tommy Mack, the clubhouse manager, has got to be the one to put it in his.
How did you get 22? This is why this.
Well, 21 was always my number, and when I came. I wore 48 my first couple years in Detroit because when you're a young guy, you don't get to pick your number. And then I switched over to 21, and when I got traded to Boston, I wanted to wear 21, and that number was not available. So it was either 20 or 22. Wade Miley took 20, and I took 22.
Ooh, I have a great picture of Wade Miley. You got those T-shirts? You know the T-shirts?
The
He's the Ace T-shirt? It's a weird time.
Okay, that didn't work out.
That's what I also remember is that like that it was great. You know, that was an awkward year, but then like how you got your deal. I was so happy for you. I remember also you being super nervous. I've talked to you about this before. We may have done this on the Twin Peaks podcast. Yeah. I don't know, but I never forget that day like before spring training broke, and you were like super like nervous and didn't want to talk. And it's because like you had a deal done, and that's a good feeling though. Deal, right?
It was definitely a great feeling. Obviously, it changed my life, and I can't thank Mr. Henry and Mr. Warner and at the time Mr. Lucchino enough for that. It's life changing when you can sign a contract like that. But, you know, when you're in that position, you kind of listen to the people around you and they tell you not to say anything and all that sort of stuff. So I was just following the guidance. You were tough. You never stopped. So
I had nothing else to do. I mean, honestly, you know how it is. It's frustrating. All we deal is contracts. I also remember in Seattle, workout day. Oh man, you were fired up that day.
Yeah.
Right. So now that we're here. And you're a few years away. I said this. This is just us talking, two guys talking about yesteryear. So, Sale signs his deal. You want to sign a deal. And it was a workout day. So, as I said, I have nothing else to do but talk contract. So, I'm walking. I was like, I have to check off this box, okay? And you're like, okay, sit down. Here's what happened. Which I loved. Like, I appreciated it. Like this, you were so. Forget it, I'm not gonna praise you anymore.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was good because you said what you need to say at the right times, and I felt like that was the right time. Like that was I've never had a player for me. Other people have, but I never had a player who was like, okay, let me articulate this the perfect way so there's not any confusion. You remember that?
Yeah, I do. And you know, I think I don't think so much about that conversation as I do about just wishing I had performed better in that season in 2019. It's one thing to express a desire to stay somewhere, but then, you know, if it doesn't happen at that particular time, you got to go out there and continue to prove why you deserve to be there. And I failed at that, and you know, that was that. I don't have any really hard feelings about it. I mean, it's a business, and that's how you got to look at it. But yeah, I'm glad you appreciated the conversation.
It was good. No, it was literally like, okay, stop, pause. Now I'm going to tell you what, which I appreciated because if nothing else, it was an off day. but how tough, you talk about a contract year. This is another sort of big picture sort of thing. We look at judges having a contract year. We look at guys have a contract, like having gone through it, can you appreciate how, because everyone's different, right? Can you appreciate how difficult or what accomplishment that is to actually have a good year in a contract year?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously for me, I struggled with it.
Did you think about it, though? Was it a thing?
If I'm being honest, at that particular time, I wanted to continue to be a Red Sox and potentially finish my career in Boston. And when it didn't happen, you can be a little sensitive and let some emotions come in that really shouldn't be there when you're going out on the field looking to win ball games. But it's really speaks to the season that Judge had. I mean, he bet on himself and went out there and absolutely dominated. And that's incredible to do, because not everyone can do it, and it takes a lot of mental fortitude and you know, just inner strength to be able to block out all the noise and go out there and perform on a daily basis. And he did that, so it was incredible. And my hat's off to him this year.
Last thing, what are you going to do now? Like, what besides build? You going to build another house? Are you going to become a pitching coach?
No,
are you
the house thing sounded like a great idea before we did it, and then we got like 6 or 7 months in, and we weren't even halfway done yet.
How many bedrooms is it? Is it like a Pedroia house, or is it like a Bradford house?
Honestly, I've never seen your home before.
Well, let's just say it's not a Pedroia house. Does it have 7 Christmas trees?
It's definitely not a Pedroia house. This would be like Pedroia's tool shed in the back. it's a timber frame home. We built it up by Mount Snow in southern Vermont, and it's got 4 bedrooms, and it's just like a little ski rental place for people to enjoy when they're up in the wintertime skiing over the holidays and that sort of thing.
What's the hardest thing about building a house? The nails?
The miter cuts. We put a big...
Everyone knows that. Come on.
Yeah, well, you asked me.
Okay. I don't even know what that is.
We put a big wood wraparound porch on it, and we had these big wood beams that we actually milled from some of the trees that we cut down on the property. And
you cut down the trees?
I didn't cut down the trees, the excavator.
Oh.
But we used them. We used them, we recycled them. But yeah, those cuts were pretty tough, and being somebody that doesn't know a damn thing about carpentry, it took a couple tries. So, but it turned out all right.
What do you want to do? What's the plan?
I want to start getting involved with youth baseball, especially in New England. Obviously, with my roots in Vermont, I've been learning a little bit more about some of the communities up there and the lack of resources for some of the kids that are up there. You know, there's basically no indoor facilities for these kids to train in the wintertime. And where I grew up in New Jersey, there's an indoor facility almost in every town. So I want to try and be able to bridge that gap, give them somewhere to go in the wintertime so that they don't have to drive an hour or 2 hours over to New York or, you know, somewhere else where they can go hit in a cage. And, you know, just try and provide some guidance. There's a lot of kids that are getting hurt now at a youth age, and sometimes it helps to hear from somebody that's been there that you don't have to be throwing all winter long, or, you know, if you are going to be throwing, that there needs to be some consistency to it. You can't take 2 or 3 weeks off and then go throw your 15 pitches for a tryout. That's a recipe for injury. And just try and use my knowledge and help these kids. I mean, in whatever facet I can help them, whether it's just training mechanics, you know, giving them directions on throwing programs, and trying to keep them healthy and enjoy the game, and kind of, you know, spread baseball a little bit around New England and get them excited about it.
In all sincerity, like, that's one of the things that Joe and I talked about, and Rich Hill's been coming on the podcast to talk about it as well, about the dynamic of youth baseball, and especially with AAU and stuff like that, because... And Utah, I'm anxious to get your thoughts on this, is that you have these kids who, whereas it used to be 10 years old, you get competitive with little Joey across the street. Now, because of YouTube, because of Instagram, the parents are saying, hey, you know, I just saw the 6-year-old just do this. We got to do this. I don't know if your involvement, if you see that there's so much pressure to keep up with the Joneses in this regard.
There is, and it makes it very difficult for these kids. I was a 3-sport athlete up until my, you know, sophomore, junior year of high school. I think playing various sports keeps you athletic, keeps baseball fresh so that you're not getting burnt out. And with the travel ball things, a lot of these towns, you know, the best 2 or 3 players get kind of picked off and go on the travel ball team, which is perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But it also leaves a lot of the other kids in town kind of left behind with, you know, maybe nowhere to play because the town teams are no longer in existence or whatever it is. So I don't think that there's anything wrong with travel ball, but the competitiveness and the idea that you have to be playing all year long and you've got to be on all these travel ball teams really, I think, can kind of take the enjoyment out of it. And, you know, kids need to be kids. They need to be able to enjoy baseball and not feel like they've got to be at a showcase every weekend or whatever it is, and just enjoy the game. And that's to me first and foremost. When you develop the passion and the love for it, then the other stuff comes later. I mean, the other thing is when you're talking about 10, 11, 12-year-old kids, I mean, these guys, their bodies aren't fully developed yet, and they're going through workloads that are not all that far off from a professional ball player's workload nowadays. And, you know, there's got to be an understanding that it's going to take time for their bodies to develop, and there's other ways to train outside of, you know, constantly throwing a ball or swinging a bat and going to play in tournaments. You can do plenty of things that refine your skills without putting a workload on a young kid's shoulder, elbow, or spine, or whatever it is.
That's a good answer. You're going to be good at this. Congratulations. All right. Well, you're good at podcasting. Right. Welcome back anytime. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.